We're discussing these principles of nectar devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Advanced devotees that are worshipping a private deity, they often worship according to Astakali Lila. It's called Astakali Lila Puja. So Krishna is having pastimes throughout the day and night. So when it says, the injunction here, it says, worshipping the deity during inauspicious periods, Asura Kal. Asura Kal means, just like we have Brahma Muhurta. Brahma Muhurta is 90 minutes before sunrise, and it goes for 48 minutes before sunrise. 96 minutes to 48 minutes. So this is called Brahma Muhurta, the spiritual time, Sura Kal. Asura and Sura. Sura means deva, devas, devotees, Vaishnavas. Good time, auspicious time, sattvic time. Brahma Muhurta, spiritual time. Ideal time for meditation, puja, etc. Krishna would rise every day in Dwarka, leave all of his queens in the bed, and he would get up and meditate on himself. He would do Dwarka Dhyan. Krishna would do Ahangropasana. He would worship himself, because he would meditate on God. Meditate on himself during Brahma Muhurta. Of course, we don't do Dwarka Dhyan, nor do we do Ahangropasana. This is prohibited for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas. But as we have Sura Kal in Brahma Muhurta, we also have Asura or Rakshasa Muhurta. We have Asura Kal and Rakshasa Muhurta. Rakshasa Muhurta is a good time for demons. This is tamasic time, good time for casting spells, curses, witchcraft, these type of activities. So they have their time. There's a time for the angels to reign, and there's a time for the devils to reign. So the devils reign from 12:30 until 2, which is the time most people in Delhi and Bombay take rest. So that's why they have so many disturbed dreams, because they're just taking rest between 12:30 and 2, and so many subtle beings enter their brain because they're not very deeply rested then. When one goes into deep unconscious state, then these subtle beings can't affect you, because they can't touch you. You're too deep. So when you take rest at 10, 9, 10, or 11, by 12 and 2, you're gone. So people that take rest at 10 or 9 or 10 at night, they have very, very infrequently and very rarely do they have nightmares, bad dreams, ghosts, etc. Because by the time the ghosts start dancing, we're deep in slumber. But you see, it's a big problem with people in the city, in Bombay, Delhi, and New York, etc. They're always complaining, oh, I have bad sleep, disturbed sleep problem, because they're very susceptible. When you first, they lie in bed at 12:31, and they're just closing their eyes, and all the subtle beings and ghosts and hobgoblins moving, oh, look, tong! And they grab the mind, and they harass the mind. But when they go deep in sleep, then you're beyond the mind. Practically a very subtle state. These are fine points. Sleep science. Which we rather discuss the waking science. But the fact is there. The point is that this Rakshasa Muhurta is an inauspicious time. This is called Asura Kal, and Prabhu Goswami is saying it's an offense to worship the deities during this time. That means in Vaidimarg. Panarchan Marg, there are many devotees, as I said, that are following the path of Ashtakaliya Seva. So between 12 or 1 o'clock, 12:30 at night and 2 o'clock, that is Rasalila time. That's the time of Krishna's Rasalila. So that's more than Sattva-gun, that's Vishuddha Sattva. That's the plane of pure transcendental goodness, the absolute pure spiritual plane. So when one is worshipping on a level of Bhav, then he's also up at that time. He's not even sleeping. He's up during that time. He may be worshipping his deities. He may be worshipping his deities during Asura Kal or Rakshasa Muhurta. So it's not an offense for him, because he's absorbed in the internal seva of the deity. And I visited some temples in Navadvipa where they do Astakaliya Seva with their murtis in the temple. And they position the deities in different ways. For example, in the morning at 6 o'clock or 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, if you go there, it's Radha and Krishna deities. But sometimes they have the curtain open to show puja, and you just see Krishna there, and they're bathing him. And Radharani's put on the side, Because Krishna's now they're worshipping in a mood of Nandagan, and Krishna's being bathed, and then there's someone sitting in a temple room, in the deity room. He's playing harmonium and he's singing Astakali Bhajans. And Bengali Bhajans describing Krishna's bathing at 7 o'clock in the morning. And then so you go there at midnight, and then they have many Utsav deities. They have Radha and Krishna, many gopis there on the altar, and they're singing songs about Rasa Leela, and they're doing puja. So it's a different level, different level of puja, inconceivable to all of us. But what it means is that these rules and regulations, worshipping the deity during inauspicious periods, we should certainly be careful about that, and the level of Vaidhi sadhana, and the level of our personal puja. Worshipping, this is forbidden, these are forbidden things. Worshipping the Lord while sitting on the floor or a chair. What does that mean? It means without an asan. Obviously, no one can do puja while you're levitating. Unless you're in TM society, then you can do puja while you levitate. You can levitate and do puja. Then you have to levitate all your puja articles also. Levitate your conch shell and everything else. So it means you have to have proper asan. And it should be jute or silk or wool or kusa grass. Or tiger skin. Deer skin. Yeah, of that type. Generally, Brahmins use deer skin, and Kshatriyas or Tantrics will use tiger skin. They'll sit on such things. Worshipping the Lord with withered flowers obtained by begging. Withered flowers or flowers obtained by begging means you shouldn't use old flowers, obviously, or flowers by begging. So we don't have to worry about that. Members of ISKCON, you never find them begging flowers. Whenever they need flowers, they just steal them. They go to somebody's garden. They go to someone's garden or some park, and they steal the flowers. There's no question that no one's ever begged for flowers, so we don't have to worry about it. It doesn't say you can't steal flowers for Krishna. Not that we're advocating that, but nevertheless, necessity is the mother of invention. And the devotees do the needful to serve their Thakur. And moreover, many people have lavish gardens and they don't really do anything but look at the flowers. They don't even smell them. So, but it should be fresh flowers. And we have to be particular about that. We shouldn't be, unconscious when we purchase. For example, I'll give you a very clear example. We go to purchase loose roses, maybe, to make a garland. And you say, okay, give me 1 kilo of roses in Vrindavan. We buy half a kilo, 1 kilo, so gram. And the man, he just takes his hand and he puts it in your bag. And you pay him 8 rupees. And you walk away. But if you're careful, if you're observant, you'll see that these other people, like these other pujaris, and you'll see sometimes some old Bengali lady. And she's buying flowers. And she's there picking out one. To very carefully picking out. And you wonder, oh, why is she wasting so much time? And then you come to learn there's such a thing as a first-class fresh rose and a second-class fresh rose. So this comes by someone's advice or by your own intuition. So when it says not offer, when it says withered flowers, it means they should be the freshest possible flowers. So a first-class fresh rose, you have to look at it. You look at the rose and you look inside and you see the stamen and pistil or whatever it is, stamens and these different, the reproductive center, the corolla of the rose. It should be all bright yellow, fresh pollen. There's some pollen there, some pollen and bright yellow color inside the red rose. And then you say, oh, this is fresh. And then you take that one. But another rose, it looks fresh, but you look in the center, it's all brown. The center is brown. That means it's not fresh. So that means the smell would not be very strong or prominent. So we should be conscious. Anyway, these are the 64 limbs of devotion. Now Rupa Goswami is telling us the negative things, the offenses to be avoided in worshipping the deity. Some of these activities seem unbelievable. But if you live in India for some time, then they sound very believable. If you come from the West, they're unbelievable or inconceivable. So the next thing that should not be done while doing puja to the deity is spitting during the worship. Which I suppose means that you're a typical Brahmin and you're chewing a big wad of Mahapan, Mahatambal, and you're doing puja, and you have to spit out the tambal, and you don't know what to do with it, because you don't, can't swallow it, you have to spit out. So, okay, in the corner of the deity room, or maybe you have a spittoon somewhere, a handy spittoon, but at least you have to step out of the deity room and then download your files into the spittoon. It's rather interesting. Now, this is an interesting point that does apply maybe everywhere. This is a no-no in deity worship. It says showing arrogance while worshipping. Especially in India, more than the West. In the West, devotees just do their service and try to be sincere and punctual and clean and dedicated and devotional as much as possible. And but in the West, they have those ideas also. Excuse me, in India they have those ideas also, but they usually have a kind of a knack for flair. They have the personal flair. They have to tie their dhoti in a particular way and wear their chadar in a certain way. But especially the way they do the puja, that's where the arrogance seems to be evident. The way, you know, there's a certain way they ring the bell, or a certain way they stand. And because generally when a Western devotee comes and does puja in Vrindavan temple, for example, because we are such an entity, he'll want all the emphasis and attention to be on the deity. So the pujari has different places he can stand. He can stand and do his puja very nicely by standing behind the door, so that the people taking darshan don't even see the pujari. But if you happen to be, generally the people that are born on this side of the ocean, they rather stand in the middle. And you have to see through their backside to see the lotus feet of Radharani. So they position themselves in such a way that they are a very, very big and prominent part of the darshan. And a very big and prominent part of the artik. And they let you know about it. So not only do they stand there very prominently, but then they just do such a swiggle and wiggle, such a swiggle and wiggle and twist of, you know, sleight of hand and twist of the wrist, that all your attention goes away from the lotus face of Radha and Shyam and fixes totally on the pujari, and that's exactly what they have in mind. Look at me. And this is, maybe they have to read this Nectar Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which I doubt they ever even looked at. But somehow they're going on in their own merry way. But Rupa Goswami is advising a different viewpoint, that this arrogance is the enemy of bhakti, and it should be eliminated. You know, that's the third step to perfection. There's eight steps. So it's not even the halfway point. Arrogance must be eliminated at step three, which is not, step four obviously is halfway. There's eight steps to perfection. So the third step is Trinadapi Sunichena. That's the third step of the eight steps to perfection. So if arrogance is still there at this level of doing Archan Marg, then it's not very much appreciated by the Lord. Because the Lord thinks, well, what is this? You know, I'm playing my flute and trying to attract these people, and you're wiggling your hips and swinging the bell all around and trying to attract the people also. I mean, who's all attractive here, me or the pujari? So, it's a good thing I'm not the head pujari, because they'd probably try to poison me or something. Because I wouldn't tolerate a lot of things they do. Different mood, different idea. So now this is another forbidden practice, wearing horizontal tilak. Horizontal means this way, because urdhva pandra, vertical, up curving, whatever you say, vertical, urdhva, going up, tilak, this is a sign of Vaishnava. But sometimes you see that these Karmakandiya Brahmins, who are smartas, or initiated, or worshippers of Durga or Shiva, And they are hired as Brahmins. They are hired by wealthy people, very wealthy Vaishnavas. They hire these type of smartas or karmakandiya Brahmins to do puja in their houses. And they're not so aware of all these fine points. So they come in as professional Brahmins and they worship Radha and Krishna deities or Krishna alone. And they're wearing horizontal tilak. And they do puja. I've seen many places, actually, even in temples. These pracharis going on, turns around, he has Shiva tilak, which generally this would be rather unusual approach. So Rupa Goswami, quoting from Vraha Purana, is saying the deity doesn't like this. These are rules, these are from the deity's viewpoint. In other words, bhakti is based on pleasing the Lord who appears in the form of the deity for the Kanishtha. And when this is sadhana bhakti, so sadhana bhakti deals with the rules and regulations for the Kanishtha, how we can follow these rules nicely and respectfully and gradually rise to a higher position of realization and purity and attachment to Krishna. So this wearing horizontal tilak, again, as I said, if we're coming from the West, we can say, what? Say what? Never seen such a creature. Can't imagine such a creature. Going into ISKCON, and going to the evening Artik, and the pujari turns around wearing horizontal tilak. I doubt you would see it. But in India, it's not unusual. Entering the temple with unwashed feet. Now, this is a big one for the Sunday feast guests. Sunday, S for Sunday, S for stinky feet. Sunday is called Stinky Feet Day in the Western temples. It's really a... So, washing the feet, that's just... And most temples have facility for washing the feet. When you go to Jagannath Puri and some other temples, when the place where you leave your shoes off outside, then you have to walk through some water before you enter the temple. It's on the left-hand side. And other temples, I forget where it was now. In Guru Mayur, it's been years. Rameshwaram. And there are some temples, I haven't been in South India since 86, 87, so it was a while back. Guruvayura? Maybe it's Guruvayura. It was Guruvayura, maybe, I can't remember. Maybe a couple temples. That part of the entrance walkway, when you actually walk into the door to go into the temple, there's flowing water there and some ridges, to kind of ridges on the sidewalk, so to speak, and the cement to scrape off the dirt and cow dung or whatever. And so you get cleaned, it's clean, scraped, and washed. It's like a car wash. You drive in and get rinsed and washed and scrubbed and everything. So your feet get completely clean before you go in the temple. It's very nice, without any separate endeavor. And then ISKCON, next to the temple, we have some facility there. There used to be, when I first came in 77, there, on the side, there were several places where you could wash your feet. On the left and right, left side and right side, many little places. There was three or four on the left-hand side, the prikamark, when you go around, you know, on the left-hand side, between the front and the back. And on the right-hand side were two or three. Especially on the left-hand side, people come from that side. But they are all blocked in, and now there's a garden and this and that. And so it's difficult. But anyway, we should know individually as devotees, these are laws for devotees, that it's common sense to wash the feet before you go into your own house, what to speak of the house of God. Offering a deity food cooked by a non-Vaishnava. So this sometimes becomes a debatable point. Offering food to the deity cooked by a non-Vaishnava. Because, of course, generally we have a deity kitchen and all the food is prepared by pujaris, temple pujaris, and offered to the deity in the West. But in India, it's quite common that people will buy sweets from sweet shops and bring them to temples and offer them to the deity, or at least the pujari will make a fast offering. Close curtain, open the curtain. 5-second offering. To facilitate the prasad distribution and also encourage the people to eat prasadam. So that's also good. But we find that when Srila Prabhupada was in Delhi and also in Calcutta, he was following the standard set by his Guru Maharaj. Not standard, I wouldn't say standard, but he was following something that Srila Bhakti Santa Saraswati Thakur did, Then in Bagh Bazar in Calcutta, in the big temple there, there was one, in Calcutta there was one famous Bengali sweet shop. And they used to make very good, maybe Rasgulla, which is a famous sweet in Bengal. And he would order those, he would tell the pujaris, buy from that temple and offer to the deity, Radhakrishna deity. And whether or not, what the circumstances are, whether those sweet makers are Vaishnavas or whatever, but his comment, Bhaktisiddhanta's comment that we know of that's written down, is he said they're very good sweets, they're very good quality. They should be offered to the deity. So when Prabhupada was in Delhi, New Delhi, in 1970, they had a temple in Bengali market. Maybe the first Delhi temple was in Bengali market, and then it went to Lajpat Nagar, and then east of Kailash, greater Kailash, now it's east of Kailash. So when the temple was in Bengali market, there was a Bengali sweet shop. And the person he brought some sandesh, or something like that, burfi or sandesh to the deity. And then the devotee said, Prabhupada, this man has brought this. And then Prabhupada said, let me try first. And he tried, he said, yes, this is good. You can offer this to the deity. Then the man would come every day, and Prabhupada would accept it. So that became a standard, because I lived quite a long time in Greater Kailash Temple and, of course, Easter College. And they would, this man was his relative or descendants, they would still come and bring this, some white sweet, maybe burfi or something, this every day to the deities, and then the devotees would take. So, whether or not they're Vaishnavas or not, I can't say. But in India, it was often the principle that they would, that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and also Prabhupada would allow sweets to be offered from outside. But the principle is here, that deity should only be offered food cooked by a Vaishnava. So it's interesting here that in this particular rule it doesn't say Brahman. Of course we say that a Vaishnava is more than a Brahman. One has taken Vaishnava Diksha, because he's a Brahman, may be a Mayavadi, or he may not be a worshipper of Vishnu even, but still be a Brahman. So, but a Vaishnava who has actually accepted the Lord, he is the topmost of human beings. So whatever caste he's in, it doesn't matter. He's a Vaishnava. So here he's saying that food's cooked by a Vaishnava. He said, it's an offense to offer food to the deity cooked by a non-Vaishnava. So that would imply that anyone who's a Vaishnava is qualified to offer food to the deity. And the example of this principle is in the Rath Yatra festival of Lord Jagannath. Lord Jagannath is certainly a very prominent and famous deity of Krishna. Vrijendra Nandan Shyam Sundar, as Lord Chaitanya saw him, non different from Krishna and Vrindavan, playing the flute. And every year he rides on the Rath Yatra festival. And when he mounts his car, he goes on a grand road or temple road, then he stops at a place called Balagundi. And Balagundi was 500 years ago, it was an area where many Brahmins lived. Many of the Pujaris actually lived there, on either side of the street. Now it's all shops, at least on the front side. But there are many houses of the Brahmins, and of course the king was also, his house was also there. Brahman Gar, and then the deity would stop there and accept offerings, which was described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And during that Rath Yatra festival, it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Jagannath would accept offerings from everyone in Puri. Men, women, children, old, young, Brahmins, non-Brahmins, Vaishyas, everyone was cooking an offering, had cooked some offering, prepared some offering for Lord Jagannath. And they were making their offerings on the cart, in front of the deity, on the cart, on the wheels, on the axles, behind the cart, next to the cart, everywhere they were making offerings. And Jagannath was glancing left and right, and he was accepting all of them with his merciful glance. He accepted all those offerings very happily. So the queens, the princesses, everyone was making an offering. The king, Gajapati Maharaj of Puri, his queens, they were making offerings, the princesses, everyone was making some nice offering for the pleasure of Jagannath. Of course, the assumption is that all these people are Vaishnavas. As far as scriptures state, Skanda Puran Purushottam Mahatmyan says that the demigods, when they look in Puri, when they glance down at Puri, they see, yes, everyone here is a devotee. Not only is everyone in Puri a devotee, but they see all the residents of Puri as having Sarupya Mukti. They all have attained Sarupya Mukti because they see the residents of Puri as four-armed. They're four-armed residents of Vaikuntha, which means Sarupya. Vishnu has four arms and they also have four arms. So that means that everyone who was making an offering was a Vaishnava. So therefore, if you want to draw some conclusion, the Lord will accept offerings from the hand of a Vaishnava, especially if the Vaishnava has love in his or her heart. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yo me bhakti prayachati tanaham bhakti paritam ashnami prayatatmaha. Krishna is telling Gita, one who offers me a leaf, a flower, fruit or water with devotion, when lovingly offers with devotion, I will accept. So if one has devotion and he's a Vaishnava, then Krishna is happy. But if he's a non-Vaishnava, then Krishna doesn't accept. So this is saying that one should not offer food to the deity cooked by a non-Vaishnava. So therefore, make your own sweets. Don't buy sweets from the store. Of course, in Vrindavan, it gets tricky. Because in Vrindavan, because what's true for one dham has to be true for another dham. So whatever is true for Puri dham must be true for Mayapur Navadvip dham. And the same truth must apply to Vrindavan. It's not that the residents of Vrindavan are less than the residents of Puri. They're equal, or you can say more, or whatever. But they're also, the demigods would see the residents of Vrindavan and also the residents of Mayapur, Navadvip Mandal, as also Vaikunthavasis, four-armed personalities. So therefore, as we used to hear when we first came to Vrindavan, it was a very convenient saying for eating anywhere, anytime, anything. And the saying was, all the food cooked in Vrindavan is cooked by the hands of Srimati Radharani. Radharani Prasad Ki. So you go in any hotel, any motel, any restaurant, any sweet shop, and it's all Radharani Prasad. She's cooked it personally herself. She's offered it to Krishna, then he's left his remnants. He's left so many nice remnants in the sweet shop. Hundreds of kilos of rubbery and hundreds of kilos of Son Papri and hundreds of kilos of rasgulas. So, it reminds me of a funny anecdote. When Prabhupada was at Radha Damodara, Vishwambhara Goswami is the late father of Padmanabha Goswami from the Radharaman temple. He was a very great devotee of the Lord and a very learned person. He even went to the West, actually. He went to California on a small tour in the 80s, visited some devotees there. He once met with Prabhupada and Radha Damodara, and he said, Swamiji, you have brought, this was in 1970, 71, 72, very early time. He said, Swamiji, you have brought a circus to Vrindavan? I think Prabhupada was looking a little in an astonished way. And he said, Goswamiji, a circus? Because he had come to Vrindavan, this was maybe 1971, 70, when he brought a few devotees, 20, 30 devotees came, Shamasundar Malati, etc. Dinanath and Banu Swami was there, and Malati, and all these different devotees. Guru Kripa. He says, and Prabhupada said, circus? And then said, what do you mean, Goswamiji? Well, and then he replied, Vishwambhara replied, you have so many lions are jumping in the marketplace. And then Prabhupada said, lions? Jumping in the marketplace? Lion, ah, lion. So then he said, Prabhupada said, Goswamiji, you are from a very respectable family, from the exalted line of Gopal Bhatta Goswamis, Pujaris from Radharaman. I have all regard and respect for everything you say, but I'm a little bit confused what you're saying. He said, actually, let me explain. your disciples are going through on the rickshaw through Loy Bazaar, and when they go by a sweet shop, they just reach out their hand and grab some sweets as they go by and start eating them. And they take some from this sweet shop and that sweet shop. And then, and when the sweet shop man complains, they turn and say, "Hey, what is this? Krishna was stealing. Krishna was stealing yogurt and butter. So what's the problem? We're stealing sweets. We're Krishna's devotees." So he said, "Therefore," and Prabhupada said, "What? My disciples are doing this?" And Goswami said, "Yes." And they, these sweet shop, these Agarwals that complain to me because they're my shishya, they're his disciples, and they complain to me about your lions jumping in the marketplace. So this is the sweets that are cooked by Radharani. So the devotees were also thinking, these are all cooked by Radharani. So let's help ourselves, boys. Because the way they display them, maybe it was during Anukut time, maybe it must have been actually, because they were here in Kartik. And Anukut time in Kartik, all the sweet shop owners you must have seen during Anukut, this Giriraj Govardhan Puja, you saw, you must have seen, I think you took some pictures. During that one time of year, during this Anukut, or this what we call Diwali time, Diwali especially, they, the sweet shop, they make millions of sweets, and they display them from the shop all the way out to the middle of the street. They bring in benches and beds and chairs and makeshift tables, so their shop extends right into the middle of the street. So you can't walk down the street without seeing and touching and smelling rasgullas and rubri and burfi and sandesh. And so they're going down in the rickshaws. There's hardly any place to pass. And just at arm's length, they're like, sandesh, burfi, rasgullas, this, that. So it's irresistible if you're a new bhakta from America. It's like a child in the candy store. So, of course, Prabhupada called in those devotees and he said, "Who has done this?" And it's a long story. Needless to say, they got chastised. So, this has all, is all an offshoot of offering the deity food cooked by a non-Vaishnava. So it becomes a problematic in Vrindavan for a couple of reasons. Why, again, I said cook your own sweets for the deities, because you'll say, okay, everybody, all the sweet shop owners in Vrindavan are Brijbasis, and they're devotees, so they're Vaishnavas. So the food they cook is also food cooked by a Vaishnava. So therefore, it's not an offense if I offer it to the deity. Right? That's what the logic is, because he's saying one should not offer the deity food cooked by a non-Vaishnava. So they're all Vaishnavas. So I can offer this food to the deity. But now there's another problem, because all these sweet shops have a deity inside. There's a deity inside the sweet shop. There's a picture of Monkey Bihari or Radha Damodara. There's some deity. And all the, and they also, they're also, because they are Vaishnavas and they are devotees, every sweet that they cook, they offer to the deity. So whenever you steal or buy a sweet from that sweet shop, it's prasadam. It's already deity prasadam. So you can't offer prasadam to Krishna. So there, again, you get in a problematic situation. Because what's offered to Krishna, you can't offer again. So this is, again, that's why it's so important to, that's why you see in Vrindavan, you see the Babaji's and you see the old devotees, old sannyasis, whatever, they have some deity. And they may have so much money also, or some money, but they never buy sweets from the sweet shop, because they know it's already prasadam. So they always say, even if they offer, if they're poor, they offer a piece of misri, which is rock candy, with tulsi leaf, or some, they get some milk and they get some sugar and make some sweet milk, or if they have more facility, they make a little sweet rice or payasam. So this is a problem, buying sweets from the sweet shop. You just have to ask them. You go to the sweet shop and say, "Okay, you're a Vaishnava. Do you have any, are you offering these sweets?" And usually they are. You can inquire. I know many devotees that have deities, and they regularly, religiously go to the sweet shop and religiously buy a kilo of sweets, quote unquote, for the deity, for the deity's pleasure first, and my pleasure second. And then they go and they offer this to the deity, and then they distribute it, beginning with the bajari. And anybody else that comes around, if no one else comes around, then okay, more the better. So this is their idea of puja and first class worship. Oh, I only buy sweets from Brijbasi sweet shop. I don't go to any second class shop, I only go to the best shop. But actually, most of the time they're offering prasadam to the deity, which is not parad. Sense gratification becomes complicated. when that real ulterior motive is sense gratification, we get in a lot of complication. But if one really has love for his deity or care for his deity, he'll read some shastra. And in shastra dealing with deity worship, it says, this is the favorite preparation of every Krishna deity. This is the best, the favorite preparation. Payasam, kheer, sweet rice. That's easy. A little milk, a little rice, a little sugar. Make it. Cook your own. Offer it to your deity. Because if you love someone, you're willing to go the distance. If you really love someone, you'll work hard for that person to give them pleasure. Go the distance. If you don't have love, then you have to buy something. Here's 80 rupees. I have money. What is this? I'm a big man. You know, hey, 80 rupees, all right. 100 rupees, too. I'll give you 2 tons. Because actually we're thinking, this looks really good. Oh, this is for Krishna, yeah. This Krishna really liked this, and me too. But to put effort into, like, cooking, are we offering Krishna, what are we really doing when we're doing puja? Are we offering articles, or are we offering our prem, our love? What does puja mean? Puja means offering, it says, everything it says first class articles, but it really means first class love, first class submission, first class dedication. Oh yes, I offer the best of silk clothes to my deity. Only silk. Look, my deities only have silk. And I have the best of paraphernalia. Only silver. Only pure silver and gold. Of course, in all the books about puja, it says a deity likes to be worshipped with copper paraphernalia. Little do we know. But it should be a copper bathing bowl and a copper Rajpan cup and all these things, copper, bell metal, brass. But we are accustomed to opulence and Aishwarya because that's our Western upbringing. So then we immediately run out and buy our silver, what do you call it, artik bell. But if you actually read all the books about puja, it says the bathing vessel for the Lord should be copper. The ashman is all copper. But we like silver. We like gold. Well, copper, oh, it's dirty. You have to clean it. It's a mess. I don't want to have to clean it every day. Ugh. So don't. I don't. But I use the copper. So it's like, because I myself have been doing puja for many years, and I also got into the silver syndrome. No, I have to have a silver bell. And this actually comes from the Vallabha Sampradaya. Because Vallabha Sampradaya, they don't want to have Garuda on their bell. So most of these silver wallas in Otkamba and other places are initiated in Vallabha Sampradaya, Radha Vallabha Mandir. And they think this is not proper to have Garuda on the bell. The Krishna should have no flute. You know, Vallabha, Krishna shouldn't hold a flute because Radharani stole it. Which is okay, that's rasic. And this Garuda bell, this is Aishwarya. So there should be no Garuda on top of the bell, that's Aishwarya, and this is Madhurya. So when you go in these shops to buy an artik bell, there are always these little silver bells and no Garuda. But when you go to the traditional puja shops, Govardhan Puja and Bandar and all these, they sell bell metal and brass, there's always Garuda. Garuda or Anatashesh. Anatashesh is Balaram. And Garuda, of course, is the Viman of Vishnu. But in the proper, in Vaishnava, books on Vaishnava puja and Radha Krishna puja, you go all the Radha Krishna temples in India, the proper bona fide temples, it's either Anatashesh on the bell or Garuda. You see it in here in the corner, my right hand corner is a Garuda bell. That's an antique shop in South India, it's from some temple. Garuda. So this puja, the real thing in puja, it's not all first-class silver bells and first-class silver cloth. And oh, when I buy incense, I only buy primo, best. Like I have a friend in Bombay. He's buying sandalwood incense, deluxe, 16,000 rupees a kilo. Sometimes he brings me 2 or 3 sticks. Here's 2 sticks donation. So the first-class thing is really our willingness to go the mile for Krishna, to make something pleasing, make one thing that please, go to surrender and do something, offer something nice and pleasing to Krishna. So I'll just finish this. Worshipping within the sight of a non-Vaishnava. It means worshipping a deity within the sight of a non-Vaishnava. This generally means the intimate seva, the anga seva, it's called anga seva, the massaging of the body of the Lord, or bathing the body of the Lord. Of course, we have exceptions sometimes for preaching and these Janmasmi Utsavs, they bring out some deity of Gopal. But usually it's some utsav didi. And this is exceptional. And this is a merciful expression of the Lord. As Jagannath comes out for his ride on the Jagannath cart, and everyone can see him, and he lets people go up and touch him and embrace him. But ordinarily, if you go in the temple and Jagannath is sitting on his singhasana, and you run up the altar and want to touch him, you'll get beaten. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu entered the temple in great ecstasy, seeing Jagannath, and he ran to embrace the Lord, and he was about to be beaten. The guards said, what are you trying to touch the Lord, embrace the Lord, are you crazy? But he fell down on the ground in a swoon of ecstatic rapture. So, of course, that kept him from getting beaten, and also that was his own ecstasy. But now that same Jagannath, if you get anywhere near and go to touch him or embrace him, you get beaten. And Ratha Yatra Kart, he lets everybody smear his eyes full of paint and rub him and squeeze him and do everything, anything. So in the same way, although non-Vaishnava, we should not allow a non-Vaishnava to see the intimate seva of the Lord on a daily basis. The exception is there on Janmashtami, that the main temple deities, or on the Avirbhava of the deities, like Ram Nomi or Krishna Balaram, the temple deity is there. And they're standing in all their glory. It's called Anga Seva when they get Panchamrita Snan. Everyone sees the deities bathing, Abhishek, Thakurji Abhishek. There's so many Muslims may be in the temple, or Buddhists, or Nashtiks, or Pashandis, or any type of non-devotee person may come. But that's the mercy of the Lord. That's the Lord's kripa. That's His choice. His choice is to have these festivals, and it's to be done in a certain way. There's a festival called Snan Yatra. So in Snan Yatra, in Puri, Jagannath comes out and stands on the front wall of his house. Can you imagine? You have a boundary wall around your house, and you come out in the morning around sunrise, or not actually sunrise, later, maybe 10 or so, 10 or 11, and you take off all your clothes and you stand on the boundary wall. You say, Haribol, everybody. Here I am. Now, Vaishnavas, non-Vaishnavas, everyone can see you. So Jagannath, Balaram, Subhadra, that's what they do in Snan Yatra. They come out of their palace, they come out of their temple room, and they stand on the wall, stark naked, so to speak. And of course they have their paint is there, which represents Vastra, or Vesh, but no external visible clothes other than the paint on their transcendental forms. And they're bathed in public. Of the 108 kalashes of water and honey and other substances by the pujaris. Not by the public, by the pujaris. Some public is also there. Some politicians and some big people from there, they're allowed up there, privileged people, and hopefully they're Vaishnavas, I would assume they are. Jagannath worshippers. But the masses of people are on the street. Tourists in Jagannath Puri. Hey, what's that? That's the Lord taking a bath. Acha? The Lord taking a bath? Oh, how strange. So some British tourists, and there's so many tourists that go to Puri, Europeans, whatever, they're walking by in their bathing suits, walking by in their shorts or bathing suits. What the hell is that? Some kind of voodoo doll, or some kind of, what do they call those Indian things they carve? Totem. Some kind of totem poles. Some kind of totem poles. Sitting on the front wall of that temple that we're not allowed in. Someone said, no, those are the idols. Oh, those are the heathen idols. That's them. Oh, my God, they're scary looking. Bloody mouth. And this is how they describe when you read the British descriptions of Jagannath. The bloodthirsty Lord, blood dripping from his mouth, moving on his unstoppable chariot and crushing the faithful underneath the wheels. This is how they describe the Ratha Yatra. You ever read the British? The bloodthirsty Lord, blood dripping from his lips, and mad, expanded, angry red eyes, stopping everything in his way, moving on his juggernaut, an immovable force, just mowing the faithful under his wheels, well, not even stopping. Hundreds of people murdered mercilessly. And this is a Hindu heathen god. Jai Jagannath.
Jai
Jagannath Swami Ki.
Jai.
The Lord we love, the Lord we adore, the Lord we will die for. Jai Jagannath. Worshipping without first worshipping Vignesh. Vignesh. That means Vigna Vinashan. Vinashan, very specially. Lord Ganesh or Ganapati, he's the destroyer of obstacles. So before worshipping Vishnu, one should worship Ganesh. You see in all the Gaudiya Vaishnava temples established by the six Goswamis in Vrindavan, the entrance, in the entranceway, and sometimes a couple other places in the temple, there's Ganesh. Radharaman temple, in the entrance there's Ganesh on both sides, the front and back. And Madan Mohan, Govindaji, all the original temples, Radhadamodar, as soon as you walk in the entrance, Ganesh is right above. Usually people touch his feet, they reach up, touch his feet more again. So this, the understanding this principle of Vishnu Puja or Radha Krishna Puja, the Goswamis installed Ganesh in the front of all their deity, in front of all their temples, even though they're worshipping Radha and Krishna. Because it's a very funny situation. Because for us, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, who are Rupa Nugas, we are followers of Rupa Goswami and trying to attain his mercy and here and there in the spiritual world as Rupa Manjari and servant under his anugatya and his line, under his guidance and direction, as sadhakas and as siddhas in our siddhadeya, spiritual body and spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan, and here as practitioners, the guidance of Rupa Manjari there and Rupa Goswami here. So we're following the six Goswamis, and we are told by our guardians of devotion that if we haven't, that we are supposed to worship the six Goswamis. Hechai Gosai Kori Charanan Vandan Yahoite Bignanash Abhishtapuran. Narottam Das Thakur Mahashaya, he wrote one bhajan, which is, what is that? It's Hari Haraya Namakrishna. Hari Haraya Namakrishna Yadavaya. He says, Hechai Gosai Kori Charanan Vandan Yahoite Bignanash Abhishtapuran. That by worshipping the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, Sri Rup, Sri Sanatan, Bhatta, Raghunath, and Das Raghunath, Gopal Bhatta, Jiva Goswami, by worshipping the lotus feet of the six Goswamis, then Abhishtapuran, all of my desires, my heart's aspiration, will be fulfilled. All my Ashabandha, all my hopes, all my desires for eternal service and spiritual perfection, will be fulfilled simply by worshipping their feet. Hechai Gosai Kori Chananam Mandan Yahoite Vignanash Abhishtapuran. And all Vignanash, all Vignam, which means any obstacles I am facing, any obstacles, difficulties, hurdles, anarthas, aparads, avidya, ignorance, all of these impediments to pure devotion will be removed simply by attaining the mercy of the six Goswamis. I don't have to separately worship Ganesh or Ganapati. I don't even have to separately worship Nisringadev. There are many Gaudiya Vaishnavas, we also worship Nisringadev. We particularly, the followers of Siddhanta Saraswati, and the followers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because in Navadvip Bhava Taranga, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has indicated some relationship between the Sringa Bhagavan and the worship of Radha Madhav and pure love. How he's helping remove the obstacles of lust, anger, and greed, etc. So our Param Guru and our Gurudev, they have introduced prayers. Prabhupada introduced a couple of prayers which Lord Chaitanya recited when he was in South India taking darshan of Nisringamurti, Jiyada Nisringadev. And he recited these prayers. Namaste Nisringaya Prahlada Lada Dayame. These prayers are in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And after several years of ISKCON, 1970 or so, there were some demoniac forces or some demons attacking ISKCON or threatening Prabhupada's life, and the devotees were concerned. They asked Prabhupada what to do, and Prabhupada said, well, you can chant these prayers that Lord Chaitanya uttered in Chaitanya Charitamrita. You can chant these prayers to Lord Nisringadev and pray to Lord Nisringadev to protect this ISKCON movement and to protect the founder of this movement. That was how the prayers were introduced. But over time and space, things have got kind of expanded into different viewpoints. But for the totality, aside from our ISKCON society and Gaudiya Math, not very much, so much in the Sringadev emphasis, but for the totality or the balance of Gaudiya Vaishnavas, there's no real Nisringa worship there, or chanting of prayers. But there's very strong worship and praying to the six Goswamis. Every single Gaudiya Vaishnava, at least once in a day, will sing this song, Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya. And many gurus, Gaudiya Vaishnav gurus, when they give initiation to their disciples, they say that if you're facing any vigna, any obstacles or difficulties, and of course we do, on the platform of Anartha Nivritti, we're all starting from scratch, and we have to scratch the surface of all of our anarthas, and we need help, we need mercy, we need special mercy. So when they give initiation, they say, you should also chant this prayer and pray to the six Goswamis. You should chant every day before you chant, begin your bhajan, your nam bhajan. You should chant this pada, this shloka from this prayer. Maybe it's called Nam Sankirtan. I think the prayer is called Nam Sankirtan. Hari Arayana. This pada is Sri Rup Sri Sanatan Bhattu Raghunath Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raghunath Echai Gosai Kori Chananan Vandan Yahoite Bignanash Abhishtapuran. And by the mercy of six Goswamis, your bhakti will go nicely. All the vigna will go away. No need separately to worship Ganapati or Ganesh. No need to separately worship Nisringadeva or pray to Nisringadeva. So these are what's going on in the Gaudiya Sampradaya. So we have some connection in ISKCON and Gaudiya, let's say ISKCON especially, with Nisringadeva. So that's a good connection. We want his mercy. We certainly want him to help us. But we should understand that the most important connection for us is the six Goswamis. Because it says in the Brahma Samhita, in the Tika of Jiva Goswami, that the question may be asked, that Ganapati or Ganesh has the ability to remove offenses or aparads or difficulties from a person's life. Of course, materialists, they want the impediments to material success to be removed. And they also worship Ganapati for success in their puja or in their business, etc. And in that commentary, it's told, where does Ganesh get his power? Ganesh gets his power because he's holding on his head, on his tumalai. Elephant has two bumps on his head, like bumps, cranial bumps, which we'll call tumalai. And he's getting his power because holding on his head, he's holding the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. This is what is said in the Brahma Samhita. It says Lord Vishnu, Vishnupada, the lotus feet of Vishnu. And the commentators and the acharyas commenting on this important verse of Brahma Samhita, they say that refers to the Vishnu, yes, Vishnu in the form of Keshavadrita Narahari Rupa, Narahari Nrisingha Bhagavan. So Ganesh is getting his power to dispel obstacles and impediments from anyone, from the lotus feet of Lord Nrisingadev. So we go direct. We don't buy downline. We don't buy from a downline representative. We go right to the source. Tavakara kamala vare nakam adbhuta sringham dalita hiranyakashipu tano bringham keshavadrita narahari rupa jaya jagadishahare jaya jagadishahare jaya jagadishahare. So, the footnote here, it says, to this principle of worshipping, it's an offense if we worship the Lord without first worshipping Vignesh, or Ganapati. So every day we're doing puja, and we're doing worship. But first, before we do puja, we have to do puja to Guru. Manasik puja to Guru, then external puja to Guru. Guru includes Guru and Gauranga and the Goswamis. Because Guru is the embodiment. He's the embodiment and the representative of the teachings of the Goswamis. So by worshipping Guru, we're also worshipping the Goswamis. So in our, I think it's called Pancha Pradeep, maybe. Pancha Pradeep is the name of ISKCON. Archan, what's it called? That orange book?
Pancha Ratrika Pradeep.
Pancha Ratrika Pradeep. The official worshipping or deity worship book for ISKCON at large, compiled by Krishna Kshetra Prabhu and other devotees, which is basically based on Hari Bhakti Vilas. But in there it says that this is puja. Devotees must first do manasik puja, mental puja, beginning with guru. First we worship guru. So when we worship guru, then we're also automatically worshiping the six Goswamis. So by worshiping the six Goswamis, one accomplishes the fulfillment of this principle of first worshiping the Goswamis, who will remove the impediments before we do puja of Radha and Krishna, or Gauranitai, or whoever, Jagannath, etc. And we can even take out the 25 seconds to recite the prayer, Ichai Gosai Kori Chananandana. Pray directly and specifically pray to the six Goswamis to remove impediments. So Guru and Goswamis, they are our guides, they are our friends, they are our guardians, they are our protectors. By having a very close and compact relationship with Sri Guru and the Sad Goswamis, then all success will be ours. Worshipping the deity after seeing a tantric. Oh, I didn't read this footnote. The footnote on worshipping without first worshipping Vignesh. Though devata worship is condemned, because Ganapati is considered to be a devata, no commentator has explained the inclusion of this item. There's Vaishnavas and commentators on this principle from Varahapuran. None of them, they don't include Ganapati. Vignesh refers to Ganesh in most cases. However, Sri Vaishnavas substitute worship of Vishvakshena for Ganesh. Actually, that's in that book. I think it's in that Didi book they mentioned. So Vishvakshena, who is Vishvakshena? Do you know? I don't know myself. He's obviously not Ganesh. Do you know Vishvak? Vishvakshena. Anyway, some personality, I'm not familiar. But the Sri Vaishnavas, who are Vaishnavas?
Vishvakshena, he is in the spiritual world, he is representing Ganesh.
Oh, he's a spiritual counterpart of Ganesh. Thank you. That's another point that's brought out in Brahma Samhita. The Brahma Samhita brings out that for all the demigods in this material world that are functioning in different modes of nature and are constituted themselves of modes of nature, there is a prototype or counterpart in the spiritual world and in a spiritual form. I think we have Lord Shiva on Kailash, who has some contact with the mode of ignorance. But then there's another form of Shiva called Sadashiva. And Sadashiva is Vishnu Tattva. He's not Shiva Tattva. He's Vishnu Tattva. And he resides on Sadashiva Loka, which is a spiritual planet. And of course he worships Sankarshan, but he himself is an expansion of Sankarshan. Sankarshan worshiping himself. Because Sankarshan expands as Anantashesh, Anantashesh expands as Sadashiva. And Sadashiva's Ishtadev is Anantashesh. That's why the Shiva, the expanded Shiva in the material world, Lord Shiva in this world, also has snakes around his neck. Because that represents his Ishtadev, who is Anantashesh. So so similarly, as Ganesh is in this realm, appearing as the son of Parvati and Shiva, with the elephant head and human body, he has a spiritual counterpart in the spiritual world, and the name of that counterpart is Vishvakshena. So the Sri Vaishnavas, rather than worshipping the material counterpart, Ganesh, who is involved with removing obstacles of this material world for material success and even in pujas, they prefer to worship Vishvakshena in the spiritual world, who is an associate and servant of Lord Vishnu. Sat Kriya Saradipika says, which is a guidebook for the Grihastha Gaudiya Vaishnavas, to worship, this is by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he says, we should worship Vishvaksena or the four Kumaras instead of Ganesh. Worship the Chatuskumara. Hari Bhakti Vilas, 6 Vilas, verse 17, also mentions Ganesh, Durga, and Saraswati worship before performing worship without any comment. No comment. So these are the shastras on this point. And then, of course, to understand or implement shastra, then one must have guru. So Satkriya Saradipika is compiled by Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, and basically it explains how to perform the Dasavita samskaras. There are 10 samskaras that are performed, especially by grihasthas, because one of them is Vivaha samskara and Garbhadan samskara. So obviously this is for grihasthas. And grihasthas, the other rules are there in Satkriya Saradipika about puja and homa and yagya, which is also done, these pancha yagyas, which are done by grihasthas following the Vedic tradition. Now when you start to look more seriously at this is a level of Vaidhi sadhana, Satkriya Saradipika, Vaidhi sadhana for grihasthas. But if grihasthas or brahmacharis or sannyasis, they take up ragmarg, the practice of raghunuga bhakti, then there's some slight differences in detail, not in principle. Principle is, there must be some pre-worship to the worship of Radha and Krishna, there must be some pre-worship. So, on the path of raghunuga bhakti, the acharyas will explain, because there's also samskara dipika by Gopal Bhatta Goswami, which is for sannyasis and brahmacharis. So the acharyas who are propagating the ragmarg section, a ragmarg practice within Gaudiya Vaishnavism, they will say on the platform ragmarg, then you should worship not the four Kumaras, not Vishvaksena, which is the Vaishnav Shastra tradition. You should worship Guru and Goswamis. So by worshiping the Goswamis, all impediments are removed. And there's several quotations in Prabhupada's books and lectures where you can hear this very phrase, if we worship the Goswamis, all impediments will be removed. And he often advised us to chant the 6 Goswamis prayer every day. In the beginning, when we first joined, which wasn't very early in the beginning, in 75, this was a regular practice. And because we were chanting every day, somehow or other, 35 years later, I still remember the prayer. And can chant it because of that practice, habitual practice. Nowadays, I don't know what they all do, but that was quite, you know, Krishna, Kirtana, Gana, Nartana, like that whole thing. Nana Shastri Charna. Bathing a deity with water touched by the fingernails. This is a no-no. Because his fingernails and stool and hair are all on the same level of contamination. Fingernails are considered to be contaminated. This is always a big problem for women. You know, grihastha women, especially in India, they like to have these long tiger claws. Comes in useful sometimes. With a disagreeable husband. Not a non-surrendered husband, you can use your tiger claws. But people that want to do puja, grihasthas that want to do puja, then they have to be a little bit surrendered and give up their tiger claws. Keep their nails trim. And also men, of course. That's one of the provisions during Chaturmasya. If someone is observing Chaturmasya Brat, and one Brat is not to shave or cut one's fingernails. Some people do like that. They don't shave and cut their... But when this becomes... It says in the scriptures, once you're not shave or cut his fingernails, and by doing that, he gets the equivalent of bathing. He gets the sukriti of bathing and taking a Ganga bath every day. So if someone is not living in a holy dham, and he observes that breath, then he gets the purifying effect of Ganga snan every day for 4 months. There's so many different benedictions, because it's quite an austerity to grow the hair and the beard, so much itching and all these things. I think I can understand by experience. But now the problem comes, then the brahmachari disciple, he reads that, oh Gurudev, how do I do puja? He says, you shouldn't cut your fingernails. So the concession is that if you're doing puja, then you have to cut your fingernails. Because Krishna's pleasure first, your tapasya second. So you cut your fingernails, and Krishna doesn't like to be scratched by your fingernails. He may like to be scratched by Sridham's fingernails, or Subal's fingernails when the boys wrestle and he gets scratched by the boys. Or he may even like to be scratched even more by the fingernails of Radharani. But that's his business and not ours. Our business is to keep short fingernails and not contaminate the bathwater, first of all, and what to speak of, scratch the body of the Lord when we're doing puja or dressing him. Common sense. Prabhupada said Krishna consciousness means common sense. And then Prabhupada commented that if you don't have common sense, then ask someone who does. This is a problem in Kali Yuga. Many people, they don't even have the basic, what they call horse sense. Is that right, Gidinagar? You're even in the horse sense. Horse sense means to know the basic how to do things, how to tie your shoe and how to cut firewood and make a fire. And common horse sense. What is common sense? How to do things in a practical, logical way. Then this is another big one. Worshipping the deity while perspiring. It's not so hard in Gita Nagari in February, in January, or Germany or Russia. You don't have to worry about perspiring while worshipping the deity. If you come to India or go in these hot summers in New York or other places. So therefore, one thing that Brahmins and Pujaris usually do is that they shave under their arms. They shave the body hair. It doesn't stop perspiration, but it stops sometimes the aroma, which tends to collect there. And it's also clean. So therefore, usually in the temples they have some arrangement. It's very difficult because I don't know how they do this in India, because in India, the traditional Shilpa Shastra, the traditional temples in India, there's no windows. In the temple room, there's the doors that open to the deity, and there's a solid vault. It's a bank vault. There's no open windows or any ventilation. And traditionally, there was no fan either in these Vishnu temples. They would have somebody standing there fanning. Because inside that room, it's quite hot, very hot in summer. So I don't know whether they eat like a kilo of camphor every day, or maybe the Brahmins in the summertime, they eat 1 kilo of camphor so they keep cool. Internal air conditioning. I don't know what they do to observe this principle, but that has to be considered. It's difficult. I've been many times doing puja in Vrindavan and Krishna Balaram Temple, and now they have air conditioning there, I think so. But before that, the last 30 years, it's very hard to observe this. Elsewhere, many other offenses, such as stepping over the used garlands and flowers and cursing or scolding the deity, are also mentioned. And these are found, cursing or scolding the deity. This happens because people say, "What is this, Krishna? I've been so good to you, and now you're treating me like this." Or if people don't have a specific deity, they just look up in the sky and say, "God, what are you doing? I know I gave you a big donation. Now you're treating me like this. What is this?" So some people, they direct that ill or that ire towards the deity by chastising or scolding the deity. Of course, now again, these are the rules and regulations for Vaidhi Sadhana. This is Sadhana Bhakti, and this discussion is Vaidhi Sadhana, the path of strict rules and regulations, do's and don'ts. Because if you examine the Vaishnava biographies, you'll come to know about someone named Mamshidas Babaji. And Mamshidas Babaji had Gornitai deities. And if you read his biography, he was scolding them. "What is this? I went out to take bath in the Ganga, and you let some chore come in here and steal your pots? Okay, well, ha! Then what? I'm not going to cook for you anymore. You have to starve. If you're not going to take care of your pots, what is this?" So you read, and he had this kind of relationship. So this cannot be imitated. It's an offense. An offense, it says right here, to curse or scold the deity. Yet we find in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, we find these extraordinary Niskinchan liberated souls, sometimes scolding, chastising, criticizing their deity. So these are, of course, again, the exceptions, not to be imitated, but simply to be respected from an honorable distance with folded hands and understanding how intimate, appreciating how intimate, because unless you're intimate with someone, you can't slap them, you can't scold them, you can't go walk across the street and slap some guy. You'll be in trouble. But if that guy happens to be your husband, and you're in your bedroom and you slap your husband, yeah, you can get away with it. Or try to. But you can't slap an unknown person. But when you have a relationship, when there's intimate relationship, then anything goes. Cursing, scolding, slapping. So liberated souls, they have a very intimate relationship with their deity, as Krishna has with the eternal associates. Such an intimate relationship with Subal and Sridham and Radha and Lalita. Who can imagine? But we can't imitate. When Krishna's sitting and eating some, taking some prasad with the coward boys, and Subal is eating some rasgulla, and Krishna looks, oh, that's a glove jamun. Oh, that's a black glove jamun. Oh, I didn't get any of those today. That looks really good. I really like black glove jamuns. And my mother, Yashoda, she didn't make me any glove jamuns. Hey! So he just reaches over and snatches that black glove jamun right out of Subal's mouth and pops in his mouth, not thinking anything. But you can imagine, if you're offering some boga to your deity, some black glove jamuns, and then you open the curtain and say, actually, I like those. And you reach in on his plate, and you pick it off the deity's plate, and you pop it in your mouth. You think this would be permitted? No, you'd be out of there in no time. Temple president would kick you right out, even Krishna himself. So this kind of intimacy we don't have at this level of our level of devotion. But in the highest levels of devotion, anything goes. So these are some... This is also something that happens. It says stepping over used garlands and flowers. And there's another nice one that's mentioned in this regard in Hari Bhakti Vilas. One should not break the garlands of the Lord. Tell that to the pujaris down the street. They get some mala, then they break it, and then they give individual flowers to people. It's an offense in deity worship. And it's well-meaning. He thinks, oh, I want to distribute the prasad. So it's all right, as long as you know you're going to hell. I'll go to hell, but I want to preach. Maybe your mood. No, I know this is offensive. Because that mala is made by Radharani. Krishna only accepts things from the hands of Radharani. So that mala is made by Radharani. And now you've broken it. So you've broken the offering of Radharani's love. Then when she ties the string on the mala, that's closing it. That's closing the offering. Okay. Now, this tied string, this knot on this garland, represents the continuity of my offering. It represents the completeness of my love. The circle of this mala represents the circle of my love. So I'm offering this in totality. Unbroken love. Aikantiki. Aikantiki Prem, Aikantiki Bhakti, one. It's Akanda. Akanda Bhakti. There's no break here. So I'm offering it like this to my Lord. And if my Lord wants to give it to you as Mahaprasad, then you accept it in totality. Now, oh, here's some for you, and here's some for you, and here's some for you. It's Hari Bhakti Vilas. It's in English. Anyone can read. It's an offense to break the mala of the Lord. So... We have a different expression in English. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. So, I just want to distribute, everybody give a flower. There's only one garland, there's 3 million people. So if I take each flower and take the petal off of each flower, first I can distribute one flower, now getting down, less flowers, now I'll take one petal out of each flower. And one flower I can give 50 people a petal. And everybody thinks, oh, I got a petal. No, it should be that you pray to Krishna, oh Krishna, you've given me this garland. Who should I give this garland to? You direct me. Ah, the mala, mala, mala. Okay, you're the lucky winner. 64, you know, Irish sweepstakes. You got the mercy. And that's how it is. So this has to be, this is the principle, and then the execution of the principle that has to be understood, either individually, through one's own realization, or from the guidance of Guru. Otherwise, if you're not on a highly realized platform, then you have to follow the scriptures. Vidhi Nisheda. Generally, people don't even know what the scriptures say. If you ask the person who breaks the garland and distributes, do you know this? Huh? Duh, what? Where'd you read that? Hari Bhakti Vilas. Oh, what's that? Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Huh? So a pujari should be highly educated. Otherwise, he can run into a lot of problems because he's dealing very tightly and closely with the Lord. Fools run in where... Was it? Fools rush in where angels dare not. So being a pujari means being an angel. But one should be educated properly. I mean, that's in Brahman. He's supposed to be a Brahman. But what about whether it means all some of these preliminary books he studies and reads, and the guru prepares him and trains him? Okay, now you're a Brahman. Now do puja. Not just, well, whatever feels good, do it. So this is... Well, that's why these books are here. If it's just your own bhav, whatever you want to do, then why do they bother writing all these books? Because there's deep principles, and the principle is the movements of Krishna's heart. The deity is Krishna. What is his heart feeling? What is his heart, what is he? Just like if I have a toy, and I'm playing with it, I see her, you take this toy, and you take and pull the wheels off. You pull the wheels off, and hey, what are you doing? You're breaking my car. Said, no, I'm distributing it to everybody. Give everybody a piece of your car. I said, you're ruining my car, you stupid. So we, when bhakti means, what does bhakti mean? Bhakti means seeing things from the viewpoint of Krishna's heart. This is bhakti. Seeing things from the viewpoint of Krishna's heart. Not the viewpoint of your speculation. And if we can somehow catch that, well, how do you see that viewpoint? Well, Shastra. Shastra Chakshush, the eye of Shastra. Guru Chakshush, the eye of Guru. Well, Gurudev, I so many people come for Janmashtami, and everyone wants flower, and there's only 5 garlands. Can we break the garlands and distribute them one by one? And if he says yes, it's on him. Either he's a fool himself, he's not educated, or he's willing, he sees a higher principle that Garanga is revealing to him, yes, distribute the mercy. Then everything should be anugatya. Everything should be authorized. We should be under higher authority. All of our actions should be ordained and sanctioned, not by whim, but by Shastra. Because Krishna himself warns this. He says, watch out for whim. Whim means your feeling. It feels good. Whim, whimsical. Krishna warns this in 18th chapter of Gita. Yashastra vidim utrija vartate kamakarata. Nasasino vapnoti nasukam naparamagatin nasasino vapnoti. He's saying, Yashastra vidim utrija. Utrija means, you give up the Shastra vidi. Yashastra vidi utrija. You disregard Shastra vidi. First of all, you don't even know it, you stupid. You don't even know what the Shastra vidi is. Vidi nisheda, yama niyama, do's and don'ts. You're a fool. You're uneducated. You get a thread and twirl the sticks and think you know everything. And then you do it with so much arrogance to top it off, which is also an offense, to do arrogant display of your puja style. I've seen so many, I'm coming 30 years to Vrindavan Temple, and I've seen so many stylish pujaris. Some really, real doozies. And if I told you where they are now, or what, you wouldn't believe it. But at any rate, keep it simple, stupid. The KISS principle. The KISS principle. Keep it simple, stupid. Just be a humble servant of the Shastra. Don't add, don't subtract. Don't add a new style. At any rate, so the knowledge we have to have, if we, as this Bhagavad Gita shloka is telling, if you act whimsically, then everything's lost. Shastra vidim utrija, Shastra vidi utrija. You disregard. First of all, you don't know it, so that's a disregarding itself, to not know it. Then, Shastra vidi utrija, kartate kama karata. Karta is like karma. It means you do, you act, you perform, you move according to your kam, according to your desire, which means whim. Whatever you feel, whatever you desire, that's how you act. Then Krishna says, what is the result of whimsical action? What is the result of whimsical behavior? Nasa siddham avapnoti na sukham na param gatim. You get no perfection, you get no happiness, and no supreme destination, no higher destination. So you lose. So better we gain and win by doing everything properly, sanctioned. So this is what this is all about. All these rules and do's and don'ts of Bhakti Rasa Mrita Sindhu are all about understanding the heart of Krishna. And this is what bhakti means, understanding the heart of Krishna and moving in a favorable way to please that and satisfy that heart. So we'll stop there.